So, in this beautiful text called Upadesh Sar, the teacher has given us various paths to spiritual progress. And he said all of them lead to the higher truth, which is the mind abiding in the self. The mind which is running outward, when it gets stationed in the self, the Lord's presence within, and that mind is at peace, and that is the goal of all spiritual practices. Because the mind by nature likes to run out, and the masters tell us the path for the Lord is within. All the scriptures, all the masters, whether you look at the Bible, whether you look at the Buddha's teachings, whether you look at the Upanishads, they all talk about going inward and finding the Lord within us, not only in the church or temple or in the heavens, but also within. So in the path of service, we saw that how through service you can quieten the mind and go inward. Through the path of prayer or love for Lord also, the mind which is seeking for joy outside finds joy in the Lord's presence. In the last few weeks, we have been talking about the path of breath or the pranayam, which is the third path, where the path of yoga through breath. And we had studied that, I'll just briefly summarize this path of breathing and then go into today's verse, because it needs a little more explanation. So they say the mind which is controlled by breath is like a bird which is captured in a net. Just as when you capture a bird in a net, it temporarily stills. But then the moment you release the net, the bird flies outward. So similarly, the mind which is controlled by breath, and those of you who do the pranayam or breathing or even breath observation, you find that the mind becomes very quiet. And the moment you stop, or even in meditation, if you sit down and meditate and you have been chanting the name of the Lord or breathing, and then you find that the mind is temporarily controlled, but the moment you get out of meditation, get out of this breathing process, the mind starts running. In fact, sometimes the mind becomes overactive because it has been forcefully controlled. It's like you have been fasting, you know, you've been fasting for a few days, eating very little for whatever religious reasons. And then the day you break your fast, then you eat twice as much. Or children in school, you know, where they are forcefully controlled by the teacher, or children who grow up in a home where there is too much discipline, you know, too much strict, rigid control, and they're not allowed to do anything. The moment they get out of the parents' house, they go to college, and then they start doing anything and everything that they were not allowed. But if they were taught why one should discipline, then the child, even when he or she goes to college, if she knows why I have to lead a disciplined life, then she will behave properly because she knows. So similarly, the mind which is properly taught why it should stay still, stay within the self. And that is the process in this book where they teach the mind or they train the mind to remain within the self, to remain stationed in the self and not keep running outside looking for happiness. And so that is the idea in this text, that you have to train your mind. You initially, yes, with breathing, with breath control, with chanting the name of the Lord, you can quieten the mind, but then ultimately the mind has to be trained correctly. So that's what they say. The mind has to be quietened, not destroyed. But ultimately, initially you quieten the mind, but then ultimately the mind has to be destroyed. So what they say, that the mind which portion of the mind has to be destroyed, we'll talk about that a little later on. But initially you quieten the mind and then subsequently you try to destroy the mind. Now, what is the basis of the mind? Where did the mind come from? What is mind? They say mind is a collection of thoughts. But how was the mind created? So they say that in the beginning, there were the five elements: air, space, fire, water, and earth. Now, these five elements had a gross portion and a subtle portion. The gross portion, the visible portion of these five elements, became the body, became the human body. our hands, our feet, and so on. But the subtle aspect of them, of these five elements, that which is not visible, that which is subtle, became the mind. And that's why the mind and the intellect are called this subtle body, because the mind and intellect are not seen by us. I cannot see somebody else's mind. I cannot see your emotions. You know your own emotions. You know your own thoughts. But the body, we can see each other. You can see each other, but you cannot see the mind. So the mind is the subtle aspect. Now, where did these five elements come from? Where were they created from? Were they just existing all along? No, they say there was God alone, consciousness or Brahman or the substratum of the whole universe. And from that emerged these five elements. And from that, the whole universe was created. And then they say God was the creator, sustainer, and destroyer. So creates the universe, sustains it, and destroys it. So the basis of the mind is the Lord, the substratum, the consciousness, the Atman, the Brahman. So to understand the mind, you can either understand it superficially, you know, how the mind functions, or you can go to the basis of the mind. What is the origin? And the origin of the mind here is described as Om. Om is the Lord, the consciousness. So even within me, the Lord is present. And it is the Lord within me that is sustaining the mind. So either I can try to control the mind superficially, try to forcefully control it. So I must not think these thoughts. I'm sitting for meditation. I must not think at all. I must quieten. Then you are forcing the mind to be quiet. But if you go within and discover the source of the mind, then the mind automatically gets controlled. So what is mind? Mind is existence plus name and form. Like suppose there is a wooden table. What is a table? You say table is wood plus name and form. So there is wood, you know, which is all over all the trees. So the wood gets shaped in the form of a table. So what do you say? It is name, table, the form is horizontal. Then you have a wooden chair. So they say what is the chair? Wood plus name and form. The wood is the substratum, and the name and the form, the shape of the chair is different from the shape of the table, is different from the shape of the wooden ladder, but they are all nothing but that one wood taking different names and forms. So similarly, all of us are that one consciousness, existence, the one Lord, with different names and forms. You can be called Diana, you can be called Anil, you can Jesse, whatever name you have, male or female, young or old, short or tall. So the names are different, the shape is different, the appearance is different, but the substratum of all is the one existence, the one consciousness. So each one of us is that consciousness plus name and form. And one has to constantly remember that I am that consciousness plus name and form. She is that consciousness plus name and form. So what that does is then you pay less attention to the name and form and pay more attention to the consciousness within me and the consciousness in everybody. So then I see the oneness, that everyone is that consciousness. Name and form may be different. Like if the chair could speak, she would say, yeah, the table is like me, the ladder is like me. Why? Because they are all wood. But the name and form is different. So that is why we say that the mind is not real. It is an appearance. The substratum, the base of it is consciousness. What do we mean by not real? And they say everything in the world is unreal. When we say real and unreal, people always think real means if I can see it, it is real. If I cannot see it, it is unreal. Like they say, ghosts, are they real or unreal? They say, well, I can't see ghosts, so they are unreal. But in Vedanta, in our spiritual scriptures, when they say something is real, what they mean is something that does not change, either in the past, present, or future, either in waking, dream, or deep sleep, it remains the same. Now, I changed. My body changes, right? I was young before, then I became youth, then I became a middle age, then I'll become old. My mind changes, my intellect changes, my understanding changes. My desires change, but the one that remains constantly in me is the consciousness. Even when I was young, this consciousness was illumining my body, mind, and intellect. Even when I'm old, even when I die, this consciousness does not die. Not only that, but the consciousness remains unchanged even in waking, dream, and deep sleep. Like in waking, my mind is active. I can see everybody, right? I can deal with the world. I can deal with people. In the dream state, my mind is active, but it's not dealing with people. It's creating its own world. So in my mind, I create a dream where I am, you know, going to Africa, and there is a tiger chasing me, and I'm in the under running from the tiger, climbing up. None of it is real. And in deep sleep, the mind disappears, my intellect stops functioning, I'm not thinking, and my body also is, I'm not aware of the body. So the body, mind, and intellect constantly change. They are not there in all three states. What is there in all three states is the consciousness. So that's why they say the only thing real in the world is God, because that is permanent. That was there before this world came into existence, is there, and always will be there. Even when I'm awake, even when I'm in deep sleep, the Lord or consciousness. So that is called true understanding. That is called intellectual understanding of what is the reality of this universe. So pay attention to the reality. Use your intelligence. Do not focus on the superficials. What you and I do, we get so caught up in the superficials. We judge people based on their appearance, based on their looks, based on their actions, that we forget that there is one consciousness within. So intellectual, using your intellect is very necessary. Talking about using intellect reminds me of a story. There were these two workmen who were digging in the heat. They were digging a hole and on the ground. It was so hot, and they were digging with their shovels, and they were sweating and tired. And then they saw the foreman, the boss, standing under a tree in the shade, you know, watching, looking around. So they say, you know, this is so unfair. We are here working in the sun, and why does he get to sit in the shade? What is so special about him? Why does he get to do that? So one workman says, I'll go try to find out. Why does he get to sit in the shade, and we are working in the sun? And he's not doing anything. So he goes to the boss. He says, boss, why is it that you are sitting here and we are working? So boss says, okay, I'll give answer your question. There was a tree. He puts his hand there. He says, hit my hand as hard as you can, punch it. So he punches as hard as he can, and he moves his hand, and it hits the tree, you know, and his hand gets hurt. So he says, see, that's why, you know, I'm smarter than you. I'm here, and that's why you are digging. So this guy goes back to the other friend, and he says, what did he tell you? He said, he was saying something about hitting. He said, what do you mean hitting? He says, okay, I'm putting my hand here. You hit it with the shovel. So that is called using the intellect. You know, we understand, like this guy had understood the principle, but he did not know how to apply that. So that's why reading the scriptures is good. You understand that. But when you truly get to the meaning of that, and apply that in your life, that is called understanding. Otherwise, you just understand it mechanically. So that's why when we read these books, or when we read the Gita or the Bible or whatever, what they say is that whatever you have studied, go home and apply that in your life. Change your life. Then only your understanding becomes experience. Otherwise, the understanding remains in the books. From the book, I have understood. But if it does not change my life, then that understanding is not useful. Then they say that there are two kinds of minds, which we have studied last week. There is a beautiful mind and a troubling mind. What do we mean by beautiful mind, and what do we mean by troubling mind? They say a beautiful mind, you know, there was a movie also, Beautiful Mind. A person whose mind has all the right qualities, you know, right understanding, the, you know, Vivek, Vairagya, you know, these qualities. That means he or she knows what is right, what is wrong. They are detached from the world, stationed in the Lord. their actions are pure because they have understood and they have applied. That is called a beautiful mind. Troubling mind, and that's a saint's mind, is that's why they say is a beautiful mind, because he or she always is stationed in the Lord and their actions are due to love. But you and I, we have all these negativities. You have anger, you have greed, because our mind is not stationed within the Lord. Our mind is all the time looking for happiness outside. That by getting this object, I'll be happy. By getting this person, I'll be happy. Or by leaving this person, I'll be happy. So looking for happiness externally, our mind then seeks happiness outside. And when I don't get happiness outside, then that mind troubles us. So the mind that is external is unhappy. The mind that is centered within, and such a person understands, I am happiness. I am happiness. Right now you are fine. That I have to understand, that I am happiness, I am fine. Yes, there will be some problems in the world from the objects, emotions, and thoughts. The world may give problems to my body, mind, and intellect, but I am fine because I am my understandings. So that I have to bring into my life. Right now I am fine. Right now I'm fine. No matter what happens physically, I may have problems mentally, the world may give me problems intellectually, and I deal with the problem. It's not that you ignore the problem and say, the, if I have a, in a pain, I don't ignore it, but I know that that is not permanent. So that is a brief introduction to the next verse, which we shall do today, and then we'll talk about, then we can discuss if anybody has any questions. So verse number 14, page 45. Prana bandhanat leena manasam, leena manasam, eka chintana nashamityada. So, prana bandhanat leena manasan. Prana bandhanat, by control of the mind, by control of the breath, prana is breath, by control of the breath, the mind goes into absorption. The mind is temporarily controlled. But how can this troubling mind, how can it be destroyed? How can I make my troubling mind into a beautiful mind? When you destroy the troubling mind, by destroy does not mean that you forcefully kill it, but by right understanding, when the troubling mind is no longer troubling me, then I become a beautiful mind. Then I become a saint. So how? Eka chintanat. By thinking of one thing and one thing alone, this troubling mind can be ended. Troubling mind can be destroyed. Destroyed means it ends. It no longer bothers me. So what is that one thought that one has to? So they say that saints who have this right understanding, they do not give much importance to life. It's like my head. Do I think about my head? No. Whole day I have been walking. Have you been thinking, is my head okay? Is my head? No. But if I have a headache, then I say, yeah, you know, my head is bothering. Similarly, if I'm walking all day, I don't think about my legs. You know, are my legs okay? Are my legs okay? No, but the moment I have an injury to my leg, or I have a cut, or I have a knee pain or ankle sprain, then I start thinking. So similarly, for the saints, they do not give much importance to the world, because the world, they say, will continue to give them problems. But when they say, when I am fine, then the world is just as when my head is fine, then I do not think about it. So similarly for the saints, their life is fine. No matter externally, they may have all these problems. So that's what they say. That how do you reach that state of sainthood? And what is this one? What is this one I should think about? Now, some people think about a person, you know, they are so engrossed. Oh, I am in love with her. I am, you know, constantly thinking about a person. Or some people think about money. Or some people say, my house. I have to take, when they are building the house for months, all they're thinking about is house, how to build. Those of you who have gone through building a house is a torture, because so anything that you think about in the world, you say, I'm only in, that will give you problem. Even money, after a while, money will go away, a stock market will go down or something. So thinking about a person or an object in the world is bound to give you sorrow. A person whom I love so much, I think about her all the time. Sooner or later, she will leave or something will happen. So they said, think about that one, which is permanent happiness, which will never give you sorrow, which will never change. So think about that one, which is permanent, which will always give you happiness, which will never change. And that cannot happen with worldly objects, with worldly people, even a position or a job. I struggled so hard to become CEO of my company. Years and years I spent. That was my only goal. And then sooner or later, you know what happens? The company goes down or I get fired. My job changes. So they say, think about that one. How can we think about that one? As we know, the one we talk about is God or consciousness. So how can I constantly think about it? Because I am working in the world and I am so involved. And it is very difficult to remember that one Lord. And how can I turn my attention to the Lord within? Because the moment you sit for meditation, the mind starts running out into what I have to do, where I have to go, who I have to meet, what am I going to eat for breakfast. So they say that one is the cause. So from the effect, you go to the cause. Like the table, like we talked about the table, the cause is the wood. Now pot, what is the pot? Pot is made of mud, and there are different pots. Blue pots, green pots, yellow pots. You know, there are vase, there is a cup, there is a saucer, all different things, but they're all made out of mud. Or cloth, you look at cloth. Now this is a blue cloth. So what is the basis of the cloth? You say thread. What is the basis of the thread? Cotton. What is the basis of cotton? Where did the cotton come from? The tree. Where did the tree come from? Tree came from the earth. Where did the earth come from? Earth came from the universe, the substratum, from the sun. Where did the sun come from? Ultimately, you reach that ultimate source that God alone was, and even the Bible says God alone was, and in 6 days he created the world, and the seventh day he rested. So when you go from effect to the cause, like from the table, same thing, table, what is the cause of the table? The wood. What is the cause of the wood? The tree. What is cause of tree? Earth. What is cause of earth? Sun. Ultimately, the cause of everything is that one consciousness. So from the effect, so when you see anything, you say, what is the effect? The tree. And what is the cause of the tree? The earth. What is the cause? So from the effect, you, and same way, I am the effect. This body, mind, and intellect is the effect. And where did I come from? My parents. Where did my parents come from? Their parents. So you go on and on and on to Adam and Eve. And ultimately, who created Adam and Eve? They say, well, God created. So the effect is me, but the cause is God. So turn your attention to the cause. Another way is to turn the attention from the seen to the seer. There's a very beautiful book in the library called Drigdrishya Vivek. I think you did it last year or the year before that on in a Tuesday class in the women's study group. But there the teacher tells us that from the seen, go to the seer. Go to the seer. What do we mean by that? Now the eyes see all the colors. You know, it sees the green tree, it sees the red, and it sees the blue sky. It might see a red cloth. It might see the, you know, the yellow sun. The eyes see all the colors, but does the eye change? Does the eye become blue when it sees the sky or green when it becomes the tree? No. When it's, whether it's seeing the sun, whether it's seeing the tree, whether it's seeing the sky, whether it's seeing the red cloth, the eye remains the same. So the seen are these objects. The eye is the seer. Right? The eye is the seer. But then they say the eye actually does not see. Even the science tells us that the eye is just a lens. And from the lens, the light is transmitted inside to the retina, and from there it goes to the brain. So the brain or the mind or the intellect is the seer of the eye. So I know the condition of my eyes, like my eyes, I can see properly. But suppose I get a cataract, or suppose my, you know, my vision is not good, I get myopia and I need glasses. Then I say, you know, I can't see that blackboard, or I can't see, you know, the road signs. So then I go to the optometrist, eye doctor, and he fixes the eyes. So the mind knows the condition of the eyes. The eyes may be healthy, may be unhealthy, may be able to see or not see, but the mind knows the condition of the eyes. And the intellect knows. But who knows the condition of the mind and intellect? Like I know. My mind is now disturbed. My mind is now happy. My mind is peaceful. My intellect is confused. My intellect is clear. My intellect understands. I do not understand. So who is that I that knows? And that we say is the consciousness. So the consciousness is the cause, and it is the ultimate seer. Now, who knows the consciousness? Nobody. Consciousness cannot become an object. That's why they say God cannot be seen as an object. God is the substratum, the knower. So, even though in our Puranas they describe that God appeared and all, but in reality, when you meditate, you come to experience that ultimate seer, the ultimate knower, the ultimate cause. And so from the effect, you turn your attention to the cause. From the seen, turn your attention to the seer. So that is what meditation is. That is the ultimate goal of man's life, is to reach that state of experience of the ultimate cause, the ultimate seer, which here we describe as Om or Brahman or consciousness. And when that truth is revealed, when a person becomes that, when the person experiences the oneness with the Lord and understands that everything is the Lord, then the mind automatically gets destroyed. This troubling mind gets destroyed. The beautiful mind remains. In fact, the mind becomes beautiful, because when I see everything is that Lord, everything is that consciousness appearing in different names and forms, I am also that. That can only happen when in through your meditation, your mind becomes still. And that still mind, that is, can become still through breathing, through chanting the name of the Lord. Then you contemplate upon that one truth. Contemplate upon that one truth. And truth is revealed and the mind is destroyed. And very quickly, the snake and the rope, no talk can be complete without talking about the snake and the rope. You all must have heard it, but very quickly, when you're walking along a dark path and there is a rope on the ground which is barely visible, it's neither dark nor light, you don't see the rope as a rope and you project a snake upon it. You think there is a snake. And the moment you see the snake, then you get scared and you get worried. And if your foot accidentally touches the rope, you think, I am bitten by the snake, and people even faint. But not seeing the rope as a rope, I projected the snake upon it, and that created all the sorrows and all the fears. So similarly, not seeing this world as the Lord, but I project these differences. And that is when all the problems arise, because of all these differences. He's my enemy, he's my friend, he's my, you know, beloved and all. So love, hate, likes, dislikes, success, failure, all comes because we do not see the world as. So that is what they say. Pay attention to the rope and the snake will disappear. Once you have seen even an inch of rope, then will you say that the 1 inch is rope but the remaining 10 inches is a snake? No. Once you see 1 inch of rope, the whole 11 inches of rope, you know, is a rope. Isn't it? So once you have seen the Lord, seen again does not mean you see the Lord. Experience the Lord within, even an inch, even a little bit, even that little bit. Once you have seen that Lord within, then you see the Lord everywhere. So that is the essence of this beautiful verse, that contemplate upon the one. What I did was just summarized the last few verses so that, you know, it kind of refreshes. It's good for all of us. Even for me, it was good to go over that. So any questions or any comments about this?
Abraham,
Yes.
sometimes it's not happiness. Sometimes it's.
It goes towards sorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. But why does it go towards sorrow? How can I change the sorrowful situation to make it happy? See, when you're thinking about a sorrowful situation, you're not thinking that I should continue the sorrow. My son is not doing well, he's unhealthy, or my job is not doing well. So you're thinking not how can I make it worse, but how can I make it better?
Sure.
So the goal, even when it is thinking about sorrow, it is how I can make the sorrow into happiness.
Okay.
Not to continue the sorrow. Like if you're sick, you say my leg is hurting, you're not thinking that so that my leg should continue to hurt. But how can I make my leg better? I need to go see the doctor. I need to take medicine like that. Yeah. So ultimately, everybody acts in this world for happiness. Nobody acts for sorrow.
They can't even imagine being happy.
Yes.
It's twisted.
Yeah, because they get joy in sorrow. They get so attached to that sorrow because they love to be unhappy. And there is one lady who used to come to this class here, doesn't come here anymore. I still see her in the office. And she loves to be miserable, you know. And she loves to be, and she's all the time complaining, every time. And she's angry at the, you know, at the hospital, at the office, at the doctor, at the secretary, at her, everybody. She's unhappy with everybody. And
she's happy.
She's happy being unhappy, yeah. Because they find joy in sorrow. Yeah, they get so attached to that. She gets so attached to that sorrow. I'm sorry, yeah?
Could that be possible?
Yes. Some people love to be miserable because that's how that defines who they are. They say, I'm the unhappiest person in the world. So that becomes their ego, that I am more unhappy than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. Right, and this Saturday we heard from Dr. Gokhlani, and that's exactly what he said, that there is reactive depression and there is chronic depression. One is reactive depression is from a particular situation, you know, death of a family member or loss of a job or, you know, or ill health, that is reactive. But some people are chronically depressed or chronically anxious, and he explained that very well, and through how mindfulness you can get over that. So there are some people who maybe started out as a reactive depression or a reactive anxiety, but through repeated thinking, they make it where now they start enjoying that, and it becomes part of their life, and then it becomes chronic depression. And that is more difficult to control. That's what he said, Dr. Gokhlani, that to control that, you have to give medicine. You have to go to a psychiatrist, take medicine, get psychotherapy. But a reactive depression or a reactive anxiety, which is situational, can be helped by mindfulness, by meditation. But once you have got to that state where it is chronic and either congenital or over the years you have made it part of your life, then meditation alone will not help. Meditation and mindfulness will help, but then along with that, they will need some psychotherapy, maybe need some drugs even for a short while. So yeah, that's what he talked about.